This month of August, the people of Omagh in Northern Ireland have been marking a bitter anniversary. It's now 10 years since a car bomb ripped through a busy shopping street on the afternoon of August 15th, killing 29 people plus two unborn twins. The bomb was planted by a dissident Republican group, the Real IRA, aiming to disrupt the peace process that had been spelt out 4 months earlier in the so-called Good Friday Agreement. Yet a decade on from that massacre, those responsible for planting the bomb and masterminding the attack have not been identified, and many are still finding it hard to come to terms with this lack of justice for their loved ones.
Some are hoping that they will eventually get clarification on what precisely happened and who did it. Others, I think, are resigned to the fact that such a period of time has now passed that it may be difficult to achieve that. So feelings are mixed.
Bishop Seamus Hegarty heads the Diocese of Derry, which includes the town of Omagh. He talked to my colleague Lydia O'Kane of his memories of that terrible day.
I recall very clearly I was there on site within a few hours of the explosion. Was there with the people in the hospital and with the relatives who were looking for their loved ones because, understandably, there was great mayhem and confusion because people did not know whether their missing relatives were alive or dead. And subsequently, my auxiliary bishop and myself, and indeed my predecessor, we spent the subsequent days conducting funerals of victims, and that was certainly one of the most tragic and distressing experiences I had pastorally. 10 years on, yes, much has happened. In the meantime, the families did remarkably well. Clearly, they are still hurting. They still have very fond memories of their departed relatives, and they clearly are marking this event 10 years on as a milestone in their grieving process.
I mean, the memories, even for yourself, for families, for everything, they must be still vivid, even though 10 years have passed.
Yes, they are. But the people of Omagh are a very good people, a people of faith. People who are very resilient, and even 10 years ago they did show remarkable composure. I saw them and celebrated Mass for them a week after the tragedy itself, and again after a month, and I could see significant progress being made in their capacity to deal with their tragedy. And they also demonstrated tremendous dignity, even though they were heartbroken and bereaved, particularly where children were involved. And it's very important to remember the unborn twins who were not mentioned maybe in the earlier dispatches sufficiently clearly. They never saw, the light of day at all. So it really was extremely traumatic. Not just for those who were immediately involved in it, but for the entire community. It was an incident and a tragedy which resonated not just through Northern Ireland, but through the whole island of Ireland as a whole, and indeed further afield. The real answer to solving the problem has yet to be found. There are many theories about what happened and who was responsible. That has never been fully clarified yet. It's an ongoing process. And there are people who are endeavouring to get to the bottom of what happened and what the motivation was.
As a pastor yourself, when you heard about it, when you first heard about it, I mean, how did you even prepare yourself for what you were about to see?
Well, I actually was about 80 miles away from Omagh when I heard it. I was in West Donegal, and I accidentally heard that there was a bomb in Omagh. So I decided, I have two parishes in Omagh, I left immediately and made my way to Omagh, and the I visited the hospital first, and it was the surgeons in the hospital and the hospital staff did absolutely superb work in keeping so many very badly injured victims alive. That's my memory of it. And then I moved into a leisure centre where there were over 1,000 people gathered together, traumatised because their loved ones were, as far as they were concerned, dead, at best missing. And if they were lucky, they were in a hospital. Because as the people who were not too badly injured, they were taken to other hospitals in Northern Ireland and indeed to the Republic as well. So there was such a mayhem that people were simply sent on helicopters and transported to other hospitals. Meantime, their relatives in Omagh, particularly in the leisure centre on that night, did not know whether their relatives were alive or dead. And I remember at that very gathering at midnight, a number of clergy were there from all denominations, and then president of the Methodist Church and myself, we led the people in a prayer at midnight. But it was only in subsequent days then that the location of the survivors who were in the hospital were declared.
How important was fate then, and how important is it now to the people that went through it, to the people of Omagh?
That is very difficult to say. On the face of it appears as if they, you know, picked up the strands of life and had to go on because they had other children, other responsibilities. But only they can tell, you know, the residual effects of the trauma which it had on them. They will never obliterate it from their minds at all. They are living with it, coping with it very courageously and in faith.
You can rebuild a town after a terrible incident, a terrible attack, but the actual town itself, the soul of a town, how much has that been scarred and how much is the town been able to move on from all this?
Well, after a relatively short time after the tragedy, they began rebuilding the fabric of the town, in the sense that they restored buildings and they got back to normality amazingly quickly. And all the while, there was a constant development and refurbishment, rebuilding, replacement of some of the buildings. So from the point of view of the actual restoring of the fabric of the town, it went quite a pace at that time. The other thing, the building up of the community and trying to get the community to get back to reasonable normality, that did take a long time, and that is an ongoing process. And as I said earlier, for some it has achieved a certain level of success. For others, they are still on the way. But as I said, the people of Omagh and the surrounding districts, and some people were there from the surrounding districts from other dioceses also, they are a very resilient people, and they are a people of faith, and that no doubt has sustained them in the past and will continue to sustain them in the time ahead.
And each of them is coping in their own way, some very private, some very public, all grieving and some searching for answers.
Father Kevin Mullen serves as parish priest not far from Omagh, and he was also among the religious of all different denominations who arrived in the wake of the bombing to minister to the sick and dying.
I was part of a very big team, and the churches, and Omagh was well supplied with clergy at the time. They worked together in various locations on the street, in the hospital and in other hospitals elsewhere, and visiting homes. So there was a huge togetherness of ministry. But I think each minister performed in an individual space with an individual person and gave them the love that you would give to any person in dying circumstances. So it's a tapestry of care that only afterwards did you realise the vastness of what was happening. So it's an event that really entered into the being of everybody, and it's marked a stage in everybody's life journey. On August 98, I was doing this, and since that, I've been doing that. It's been one of those milestones that are in the calendar of everybody's life. And I hope it has been a milestone that has opened people up to the greater dimensions of life and death and eternity. And I think it unleashed what was there already, a great love of everybody. I've noticed since that a great openness to one another, a great gentleness, a great spirit of cooperation between the churches, and a welcome in places that maybe you mightn't have gone before, where people recognised you as someone who had helped their injured and the people from their community, and there was a lovely sense of being respected. And I do think that the opinion was that the churches in general ministered in a very intense and loving way, and brought the gospel into a very real context throughout that day and the years following.
On the day for you as a priest working on that day, how much did that teach you, and how much has it taught you in your work now?
I suppose I had at that stage a certain number of years of priesthood behind me, and Northern Ireland had a long history of tragedy behind it as well. And through different pastoral postings, I had encountered the effects of bombs and bullets. But it happened at a time when we believed that all that was behind us and that peace had broken out. It just brought me up again against the stupidity of the human mind and heart, that at times it just cannot accept that there is a better way and fall back on old ways. And that battle hasn't yet been won. I suppose until the end of time it won't be won, because we're forever forgetting. The Lord is always saying, you have eyes that don't see and ears that never hear and never listen. We are all the time struggling, even in our own hearts, with falling back on old ways. So there was that battle going on there, and as I say, we're still fighting it.
I suppose you can never be prepared for something like that, though, can you?
Well, I don't think anybody was. I mean, it was the greatest, in terms of single atrocity death, the greatest tragedy of the Northern conflict. I remember just on the day, everywhere I looked in the street, there were bodies. Now, thankfully, a friend of mine had covered the bodies with drapes taken from the dry cleaners, and out of respect, and I suppose out of just fear myself of seeing what I was afraid to see, I didn't pull back any of the drapes. I prayed over the covered bodies. Only one was at that stage still not covered. But I've heard from friends since that they were there earlier than I was, and they were picking up dying, and they were picking up limbs that had been amputated. They were comforting little ones who were crying for their mommy. The memory is just devastating.
10 years on, I'm sure there's still anger that those responsible haven't been brought to justice for this terrible crime. Is that still a feeling that abounds in Omagh?
Yes and no. There are obviously questions that have not been answered and may never be answered. Is there proof that somebody did something? Are there other sinister elements of collaboration between God knows who? Were things allowed to happen? There's also the school of opinion that even if we do find out, it won't change our suffering or our dignity. One victim who suffered severely and has miraculously survived said, I don't really want to know, because it would only make me too angry. And we also have to grapple with, and this is the church's ministry again, with the gospel of loving your enemies and praying for those who persecute you and forgiving. So those tensions are still there in the community.
And my thanks there to Father Kevin Mullen, talking to my colleague Lydia O'Kane. And earlier you heard Bishop Seamus Hegarty of the Diocese of Derry.